And thank you for being here. We have got a set of notes here for Genesis 22. It's kind of the key verses of what we're looking at in Hebrews, kind of one of the reasons why we've stopped and taken time to go through. On these notes that I've given you, and they're online also on generationword.com underneath the live feed, you've got Abraham's going to be at Beersheba, which is where he starts at today, 50 miles south of Salem or Mount Moriah. He's going to go that 50 miles. It's going to be a three-day journey. It says in the text of Scripture, if you break it down, it'd be about 17 miles a day, if that's how he's doing. Again, he could have traveled for 2 days and then part of a third day, however, but that's how it would work. I've got over there a topography map right next to it that kind of shows you the heights. It gives you the height of Mount Moriah, which is 2,400 feet. To the east is going to be Mount of Olives, which is a little bit higher, 2,600 feet. To the west is going to be the western hill that rises to another 2,600 feet. And rising to the north, it's going to go up to 2,500 feet. So Mount Moriah is a mountain. Again, now when we say mountain, if you want to see mountain, turn the page. And you're looking at it on the top picture on the back there. That's a live picture. Tony and I are standing to the south of Jerusalem, looking over the city of David. You can see the Mount of Olives to the right. You can see the Kidron Valley. You can see Mount Moriah. In the distance, you can see the high place of Geba, which is about 2-3 miles to the north there. The Central Valley, which is pretty much covered up now because of just civilization. And then the rising western ridge. So you can see Mount Moriah is a little lower than the Mount of Olives, the northern mountain, and then the western ridge there. But it's fairly close. But when we say mountains, you see what I'm saying. We're talking about hills. It looks like western hills is what it looks like. But they're called mounts. There are rises in there. So just keep that in mind when we say mountain. There's another great topography map here at the bottom showing you now looking at it how high it would look. And right there on Mount Zion, there's a little brick building drawn right there. That's the citadel. That's where all the fortresses were at. If it be Herod or the Maccabees, they always had a fortress there. And that's where today the place High Tower, Tower of David, is located right there, which is a minaret. Jerusalem was a great place to be, Salem, because you've got the Gihon Springs there, a natural water supply in the Kidron Valley. It's pointed out in several of those places. But it is surrounded by hills or mountains and valleys. So to get there, you're going to have to go over the hills, go down into the valley, and then come up. And so Salem was naturally a nice place to settle. And it takes all the Psalms, when you see David writing Psalms, and if you picture him writing, these pictures on the front again are kind of nice, right here, the little pictures, because that is the city of David. That would be the city of Jabesh, or Salem of Melchizedek's day, and then Jabesh of Joshua's day, and then David takes it and calls it the city of David. And right there's some Jebusite stone structures that are still there. You can see them today yet. And that's where the Jebusite or the Canaanite fortress was at. When David took the city, he came in through the Gihon Springs. Joab did, took the city, and then he built his palace next to that northern wall there by the fortress. That's where he. But notice right there, this first map, see where Mount Moriah is at. It's outside the city. So if we could go to this little diagram, this little picture, going nowhere. So here we go, chapter 22 of Genesis. And what we're looking at is the life of Abraham, particularly because in the book of Hebrews, it talks about his faith and what he's done. We've seen some interesting things coming so far. We see him listening to God, obviously believing in God, following God, trusting God. But it's been from the time that he was 70 until he's 100. And then now Isaac is older. He was born when Abram was 100. Sarah was 90. Sarah's going to die at 127 in the next chapter. Abraham was 100 when Isaac was born. So Isaac's born right here, and he's going to be, you know, he's going to live all these years. He's going to be offered here before Sarah dies at 127. So there's a 37-year gap right here from the time that he's born until the time that his mother dies. Now, we can probably rule out the fact that he's an infant. You know, he's not, Abram's not carrying a baby up on the mount, all right? Especially when we get to the point where Isaac's going to carry the wood. So we can rule out, you know, 2 years old, 4 years old, 5, 10. We can rule out 12 years old. I'm going to say he's older than 12. But he's not 38 because that would be after Sarah's death. So he's somewhere between, I would say, 12 and 37. One of the Jews' tradition is that he's 37 because when Sarah hears about it, she dies. Okay, I mean, that's not biblical, but that's like, but we do see, again, in this next chapter, and I mentioned it before, in chapter 23, Sarah's going to die at the age of 127, but she's going to die near Hebron. She's not living in Beersheba. So Abram is leaving, chapter 22, Abram is leaving, he's living in Beersheba, we assume Sarah's with him. He does this thing, and we go to chapter 23, she's not in Beersheba anymore, she's in Hebron, which doesn't mean anything, except she's not, did he go back to Hebron? It seems like Abram was going to stay permanently, planted a tree, that kind of Beersheba was kind of like his home, he kind of settled there. Did Sarah take off? Like I said last week, Dennis Prager says, yes, she did. She heard about this episode with Isaac on Mount Moriah, and it's like, I'm done. So anyway, I think a safe guess for how old Isaac would be, 17 would be a good guess. Again, we're guessing, speculating, because he's still very obedient. He's still talking to his father. The way his father addresses him as, you know, a lad, if that's the word you'd want to translate it as. But, of course, a man who's 100 years old, you know, there's quite a few people who would call kids. You know, I mean, I still refer to a lot of people that are like in their 40s and 45, 50. Well, they're just kids, you know. Some of the kids teaching at school, it's like, well, they're 40 years old. You know, well, I remember when they were kids. Well, you know. But anyway, so if Abraham's 100 years old, from his perspective, a 37-year-old kid is just a lad. And you understand that now. I didn't understand that when I was 25 because I was a man. But to a 50-year-old, I was just a kid. So 17, he's still listening to his father, but he's strong enough to carry the wood and ask questions. And so that's, I think, somewhere 17 to 25 is a fine age. It doesn't say for sure. But he is definitely not a little boy. He's not a little child. I think a lot of times in previous years, when I look back when I was a child and hear this story, the ideal is he's carrying a little boy. He's got a little boy going up there to sacrifice him, and I don't think that's the case. You also got to realize that Abraham then is 100 years old when he's born. If he's Isaac's 12, then now Abraham's 112, 115, 120 years old. He's not going to be, it's going to talk about binding. He's going to bind like you bind an animal, hand, the feet and the legs together, to be sacrificed alive. They're going to bind him together. He's going to bind his feet, which is interesting because there doesn't appear to be a struggle. Because, again, if he's just an infant, you know, an old man can wrap him up in rope and get ready to sacrifice him. But if he's a 15-year-old, 17-year-old young man and Abram's 112 years old, there's not going to be a lot of struggling going on. I'm sure Abraham can handle his own. But again, you just get that picture of an old man and a young man, and the young man ends up bound on an altar, and the old man's got a knife. It's just, this is one of those strange, strange stories. Yet, it's pivotal. I mean, it's like everything comes back to this in so many ways. Let me read a little bit here, and let's get started. Chapter 22. Now, we just finished with Hagar and Ishmael being sent away. Abram's first son, Ishmael, sent away, which means his past, any plan he had in the past is gone. His hope now is in the future with Isaac, but Isaac, in another sense here, is going to be sent away. In chapter 21, Sarah says, send Hagar and Ishmael away. In chapter 22, God is going to say, in a sense, send Isaac away. So Abraham is caught sending away any hope he had from the past. I've got this plan for my future. That's gone. And now his hope for the future in Isaac, that's being asked. So it's like Abraham is now in the middle, 110 years old, 112 years old, 115, waiting all these years for these promises to come to pass. And now God's going to ask him, after Ishmael sent away, he's going to ask him to sacrifice Isaac. It's like, how is this going to take place? Sometime later, sometime after that treaty at Beersheba in chapter 21, while he's living in Beersheba, sometime later, God tested Abraham. Very clearly, it says God is testing Abraham. So the first disclaimer right there, this is a test. Now, as you read through this, you don't know, obviously we know how it's going to end. We've read the story before. But your first reading, or if you're reading this from the perspective of Abraham, it's a test. Is it a test he's going to have to follow through on? We're going to assume he's planning on fully going through with this. So it's a test. Now, anytime you flip those around from God tested Abraham to Abraham tested God, that's always bad. It's always results in some kind of judgment. Like when Israel tested God when he was in the wilderness, they got judged. But God told them, I am testing you in the wilderness. So understand, in our lives, God is going to bring things across our paths, not to destroy us, but to test us. And we're to trust God in the test, but at no point are we to reverse that. And now all of a sudden, we're going to go over here and do this and see if God responds and test God. We're going to murmur, or we're going to complain, or we're going to something where we're putting God to the test. Satan, of course, had Jesus, those were the temptations, were to put God to the test, and Jesus refused all three. And there's much more involved in those three temptations. But if God tests us, that's to be expected. He's watching us prove ourselves. There will be deliverance. There will be reward. There will be strength for us. But there'll be times that we're going to be tested. In fact, if you want to go back, the whole human experience is a test. I mean, God could have made this whole thing. He created a reality. This whole thing could have been a lot simpler. But this whole human experience is a test that he's put before us that we will respond to, and we will be rewarded, we will be delivered, we will be judged, we will be strengthened through this test. And anyway, that's what we're happening right here. So God is testing Abraham, which is a good thing. It happens all the time. He said to him, Abraham. And Abraham replies, here I am. Then God said, here it comes, take your son, your only son, and again, that only son could also refer to the son you care about, your precious son. Again, notice he says your only son, because there is no more Ishmael. Ishmael, in a sense, was divorced along with his mom. When his mom was sent away, Ishmael was sent away, so he has no son. Isaac, your only son, again, that only son would mean precious son, the son you care about, that's dear to you, whom you love, and go to the region of Moriah. Now, I showed you on the map the region of Moriah. Sacrifice him there as a burnt offering on one of the mountains I will tell you about. Now, when it says one of the mountains, well, I just showed you, you've got Mount of Olives, you've got the Western Mount, you've got the Northern Mount with the high place of Geba, and you got Mount Moriah. And, of course, Mount Moriah would be the place. On one of the mountains I will tell you about. Early the next morning, Abraham got up and saddled his donkey. He took with him two of his servants and his son Isaac. When he had cut enough wood for the burnt offering, he set out for the place God had told him about. On the third day, Abraham looked up and saw the place. Now, I've got in my Bibles the place circled, because when God talks to Moses, he talks about when they had the tabernacle, but he talked about the day that he would show them the place. They were to have a permanent place of worship. And it's called the place. It's this place. And Mount Moriah is the place. When he says, you know, the place that you're going to worship, the Mount of God, it is the place. Not just some place, it is this place. And again, I don't think we can emphasize, well, here it is, right here. I don't think we can emphasize that enough. That is where God was worshipped in the days of Melchizedek. That's where Isaac was offered. When Moses was in the wilderness, God says, I will take you to the place. And that's where you'll have a permanent place. David, Solomon, that's where the angel of the Lord, when they were a plague was in Israel, stopped there. And David built an altar there and worshiped God. So that place has been repeated. Jesus, came here and spoke on this Temple Mount and where the temple was at. He prophesied it being destroyed and says it's going to be trampled on after his time. It would be trampled on until the time of the Gentiles was fulfilled. In which case, then we pick up in Revelation, and the temple is going to be rebuilt, and Jesus is going to land on this Mount of Olives. It's going to be split, and he's going to enter this east gate to be seated on that place. So from Genesis all the way through the Gospels to Revelation, this place, Ezekiel prophesies about that place. So I think when it says the place, it's pretty clear that we're talking about this location. And it's not unknown to Abram. Notice he doesn't just start wandering around. He sets out on a three-day journey. He knows where he's going. Also, it's interesting as we look at this. He saddled his donkey. He took his servants. And when he had cut enough wood for the burnt offering. So for some reason, down in Beersheba, before he leaves, they're going to carry this wood for 3 days. Instead of waiting until they get there, finding a sacrifice, finding some wood. They bring everything with. They bring the sacrifice, which is Isaac, unknown to everyone else. They're going to bring the wood. And he's going to talk about having fire. And when it talks about the fire, I don't know if you can do what you want to with it, but it doesn't necessarily mean that they had a torch with fire and they carried it all the way. It could mean that. It could be the fire stone. That they had the stone, the kindling kit that they would start the fire with. And most likely that's what they're taking with them is the fire stone that they're going to start the fire with. It's not like they, no one knew how to start fire. They could do it. So I would assume if they can dig a well, they can start a fire. So I think that's what, as we go through this, that will pop up again. Okay, verse 3 again, early the next morning, Abram got up and saddled his donkey. And he's got servants, but notice, his servants are just like observing because he had to serve. If I have a servant, I'm going to have, hey, saddle my donkey, cut some wood, load it up, and I'll be waiting. It's like he's got the servants, but he saddles his donkey. He cuts the wood. He took with him two of his servants and his son Isaac. When he had cut enough wood for the burnt offering, he set out for the place God had told him about. On the third day, Abram looked up and saw the place. He looks up, and he's coming from the south, and he looks up, and he can see, just kind of like that picture right there where Tony and I are standing right there, that top picture. He looked up, and he saw the place. And again, he knows where he's going. It's not like it's a mystery. He knows where he's going. He was with Melchizedek there a few chapters ago. He said to his servants, "Stay here with the donkey while I and the boy go over there. We will worship, and then we will come back to you." Now, that's kind of a key verse, is what's going on right there. He knows he's going to offer, it's been very clearly said, offer Isaac as a burnt sacrifice. That means Isaac is going to be consumed by fire. What he tells his servants now he didn't tell Isaac, "Hey, Isaac, we're going to go sacrifice you," because Isaac's going to ask a question here in a moment. We've got the wood, we've got the fire, but where's the sacrifice? Isaac knows how this ritual works, but it's like, "Father, we're missing the sacrifice. We've come all this way. We forgot the sacrifice." So he hasn't informed Isaac that he is the sacrifice. He hasn't told the servants we're going to sacrifice Isaac. But he does say here, either this is a deceptive statement, "We're going to go worship and we'll be back. You don't need to worry about anything. Just hang out down here. I will be back," meaning we're not going to be back. I'll be back without Isaac because I'm going to sacrifice him as a burnt offering. Or he's indicating that he's going to follow through with this. But just like Job says, the Lord gives and the Lord takes away, Abraham is pushing that to another level. The Lord gives, the Lord takes away, and the Lord restores, or the Lord resurrects. And if you look, and this is a good time to go to Hebrews chapter, I got the verse written on the back page there, Hebrews 11, verse 17. And this is kind of why we're doing all this here in the book of in Genesis, so we have some kind of context for this verse instead of just meandering through. And maybe, 4 months is too much context. We'll come back to this here in a couple weeks, if not 1 week. Chapter 11 of Hebrews. This is what the author of Hebrews says about this situation. Verse chapter 11, verse 17, by faith, Abraham, when God tested him, and we know that's where we're at, offered Isaac as a sacrifice. He is going to offer Isaac. He who had received the promises was about to sacrifice his one and only son. Now again, Abraham had received the promises, but all the promises hinged on Isaac continuing the family line. Abraham had possessions, he had all these things, but it was clear throughout the story that having all this stuff to Abraham was not sufficient. He wanted a lineage. He wanted a family to continue with these promises. Because he had Eliezer, he's just going to give it to. But now he's got Isaac. Well, now the one who's going to, now he doesn't have this whole group of sons. He's got one son. He's not like a king with a harem of all these sons to choose from. Some of the judges, they'd have like 70 sons and stuff like this. He had one, and everything hinged on this one son. David had Absalom, but when Absalom died, he could have another son take over. That son failed. He could have, eventually, one of his youngest sons, Solomon, became the king. So David, you know, didn't have the only son. David had a whole list of sons. Abraham's, and he's, again, not a young man. Abraham's an old man, so he's not like going to, this is a miracle that he's got Isaac. Anyway, he who had received the promises was about to sacrifice his one and only son. In other words, sacrifice the very promises God had given him. Even though God had said to him, it is through Isaac that your offspring will be reckoned. Verse 19 is the key. Abraham reasoned. Again, reason means he thought about it. He did the math. It means he logically came to a conclusion. He looked at it from all these different angles, and this is what he reasoned. Abraham reasoned that God could raise the dead. So that, I mean, that's what Abraham, I think we've got to consider that as we go into this. As Abraham's going through this, he knows the voice of God. He's in the land of Canaan because of the voice of God. He's done a variety of things, including send Ishmael away, including trust God for Isaac because God has spoken to him. He knows God is faithful, and now God says, sacrifice him. It's not like God is changing his mind, that God's confused. It's not like, again, it's not like us. Again, I don't know about your personal experience, but some people, well, I feel like God is leading me. I feel like God is telling me. And I do the same thing, but I always have a big, like, question mark by it. You know, I mean, God has never, like, appeared to me with a host of angels and said, go thou thus, Galen. And it's like, I have no doubt about it. Tony, did you see that? My gosh, yes, I got it on video. You know, well, I would have it on video if she would be watching. But it's like, I whenever I have an impression from God, there's always like that. I misunderstood, or maybe I'm making this up. I trust the Word of God. The Word of God is solid, but the impressions I have in my heart, the direction I think I'm following God, it's like I know that I may have to back all the way up and start over because I may have missed that. Abraham is not in that situation. He is not in that. You can't, I don't think you can compare this to, well, I feel like God told me to go into the ministry, but, you know, it's not really working out. Maybe I miss God. Yeah, that could be. You maybe wanted to go into the ministry, or maybe God is leading you a different direction, and you just thought you had it figured out. Abraham has done that. God says, I'll give you a child by your own body. Oh, okay. Sarah says, well, sleep with Hagar and have a son with your own body. Hey, we figured it out. So Abraham has done that, where he's tried to figure God's plan out ahead of time, and then he had to backtrack and send Ishmael away. So Abraham has done that, but it's very clear that he is listening to God. God says, sacrifice Isaac. So it's not like, maybe I misunderstood God. And we can't compare this to us following the voice or the leading of God in our own lives. I don't think, because this is a pretty clear. So Abraham has reason. If God has made these promises and my offspring is going to come through Isaac, but God is now asking me to sacrifice Isaac like a burnt offering, well, one, he's not going to die in the flames. He's not going to die when I slit his throat. Or he is, after he's burnt up, he's going to rise up out of the ashes like an Alcatraz and be resurrected. And understand, Abraham doesn't know all about the Exodus. He's got a prophecy about the land of captivity. He doesn't know about the law of Moses. He doesn't know about David and the promise of the coming Messiah. You know, the promise, even his grandson Jacob is going to give the prophecy of the tribe of the scepter will not depart from Judah. Abraham doesn't know who Judah is. So all the, plus he doesn't know about the New Testament, doesn't know about the coming of Jesus Christ, his death and resurrection, doesn't know anything about the church. But he does know that God is dealing with mankind, that God is dealing with sin, that God requires sacrifices, and that the seed of the woman is going to crush the serpent's head, and that things are going to be restored in some fashion through this seed of the woman. So you could, it doesn't say it specifically, but it does say that Abraham reasoned that God could raise Isaac from the dead. Just like when Noah got off the ark, he maybe was thinking, we're in the new age. We've dealt with sin. Mankind has been judged, and we're in the new age. And then he thought, oh, kind of disappointing. Especially after the prophecies of Enoch and the life of Methuselah, Noah gets off the ark. It's like, we must be there. It's like, well, no, we're a long ways. We're still waiting for it, Noah. Abraham may have been looking at this might be that seed. This may be the sacrifice that deals with all nations will be blessed through me and Isaac. It's like, this might be it. He may have thought, in a sense, that Isaac was the Messiah. Again, that, I don't want to say it's quite that bold, but he may have been looking like that. Okay, I'm going to do this. I mean, that would okay, that makes sense. Okay, Abraham reasoned that God could raise the dead, and figuratively speaking, he did receive Isaac back from the dead. Meaning, in Abraham's mind, this is saying, and in our story, Abraham has committed to sacrificing Isaac. Isaac is dead in Abraham's mind. It's just a matter of time before it happens. And figuratively speaking, God is going to intervene. So we go back to Genesis chapter 22 and continue reading. He tells the servants, we will worship and then we will come back to you. Now, is he saying in there, one, is he being deceptive? I don't want you to get suspicious that I'm going to go up there and kill my son. Or is he saying, you don't need to know the details, but actually I'm going to go up there, we're going to offer Isaac as a sacrifice. God is going to raise him from the dead, and we'll come back because I can't leave him there dead because all the promises God has given me are based on this son Isaac. And again, they are the promises of God. He has heard them. He's watched God make a covenant with him. He's seen God make sacrifice, or he's seen sacrifice made and God honor him. Okay. Abraham took the wood for the burnt offering and placed it on his son Isaac. Now, again, I'm not sure how much to read into that figuratively, but that's exactly what happens with Jesus, is Jesus, the cross is put on his back and he carries the wood. And he himself carried the fire and the knife. Now, again, maybe he started the fire there at the base of Mount Moriah and took the fire with him. Or that fire means the firestone, the kindling kit, and the knife. And again, the word knife means it's a razor-sharp knife. It's a knife used for, flaying or sacrificing animals. As the two of them went on together, Isaac spoke up and said to his father, Abraham, Father? Yes, my son, Abraham replied. The fire and wood are here, Isaac said. But where is the lamb for the burnt offering? So they're on their way up. You would get the impression that they've done this before. Father and son have made an offering before. But where is the lamb for the burnt offering? Abraham answered, God himself will provide the lamb for the burnt offering, my son. And the two of them went on together. Now there's two ways, seriously, there's two ways of reading that line. And that it all hinges on the fact that it ends with my son. And it's where the son is in the speech. Is it God himself will provide the lamb? Okay, God is going to provide the lamb. God is going to be the one that provides the lamb. And in a sense, he has provided the lamb. He's provided Isaac. God was the one who allowed or caused Sarah to have a son, and now it's time for the offering. So God has provided the sacrifice. God himself will provide the lamb for the burnt offering, my son. He's telling him, you're it. Or it's, as we put a comma in there, the Lord will provide the lamb for the burnt offering, my son. Meaning that's, he's addressing his son. So, and again, the commentators in the Hebrew, that could be read either way, depending on how what form of speech you put that in. And the two of them went on together. Now, at some point here, if it's there, or later here as they get through this, Isaac is going to figure out that he is the burnt sacrifice. At no point is Isaac like, what? This isn't going to happen. It may be here or somewhere in the story, Isaac is going to say, oh, really, Dad? Or whatever he says. And he's going to get, well, bound. He's going to be wrapped up in rope. Now, the servants aren't up there helping hold him down. Abraham is going, see, if you had Abraham and the two servants went up Mount Moriah, and then Isaac ends up getting bound, it's like, ah, well, I can kind of put the pieces together. Abraham says, jump him. And they jumped him and put a bag over his head, tied him up, threw him on the altar. They're holding him down. That's not what happened. They went up by themselves, and they're having a conversation. Where's the line? We're missing something. Well, you're it, buddy. Now, he doesn't tell him in this line, son, you're the sacrifice. He's going to tell him in the next couple of verses, son, you're the sacrifice. And if he doesn't tell him directly, Isaac's going to all of a sudden go, I'm the sacrifice, as he's laying on the altar with his hands bound. And Abraham's got the knife up, ready to, you get the picture of him having the knife up like this, like he's going to like stab him, like, ah! It would be more of a the cutting of the throat. It'd be more, you know, the sacrificing. Okay, let's read on. I know, this gets kind of graphic. Children, can you imagine they teach this in Sunday school to the children? Let's stick with Noah's Ark and the animals, shall we? When they reached the place God had told them about, see, there it is again, the place, third time it says the place. When they'd reached the place God had told them about, Abraham built an altar there, that's interesting, built an altar, and arranged the wood on it. He bound his son Isaac and laid him on the altar. So as easy as it was for him to put stones together to make an altar and to arrange the wood on it, it's like, well, I'm just going to wrap your hands together here and put you right up here, Isaac. Are you comfortable? And it's like, and laid him on the altar on top of the wood. Now, right there at that point, somewhere between God himself will provide the lamb for the burnt offering, you're it, my son, or right here, and laid him on the altar tied up. So at some point there, Isaac's figuring out, Dad's going to burn me in the altar. Then he reached out his hand and took the knife to slay his son. Slay his son, that means, you know, not stab him to death, but to cut his throat. So took the knife to slay his son. And that's the word slay is exactly the word they use for animal sacrifices. But the angel of the Lord called out to him from heaven, Abraham, Abraham. Again, it's interesting. It says his name twice. He's letting him get up to that moment where everything's ready, and he's got the knife out, and he's ready to cut his son. He calls out, Abraham, Abraham. Now, right here, notice what it says. It says, but the angel of the Lord called out to him. The Lord has been speaking to him, but now you've got the angel of the Lord, and they have that situation where you've got a theophany, where you've got God himself is speaking to him, but all of a sudden it's the angel of the Lord. It's God is now manifesting right there. The voice is coming directly to him, and he is on the scene, and this would be a manifestation of the second member of the Trinity, the Son of God, who's going to himself become Jesus, who himself is going to actually do this himself for mankind. But the angel of the Lord called out to him from heaven, Abraham, Abraham. Abraham replies the same way, here I am. He says, do not lay a hand on the boy. Again, that's important. Boy kind of gives you a clue. Lad, it refers to someone young, not an infant by any means, but it could be a teenager. Do not lay a hand on the boy, he said. Do not do anything to him. Now I know that you fear God because you have not withheld from me your son, your only son, your precious son, the one that everything hinges on. Again, you ask the question, now I know that you fear God. Now, just bluntly right there, so far we could just summarize this. It begins, God tested Abraham, asked him to do something ridiculous, and when Abraham proves obedient, God stops, says, now I know you trust me. I was testing you. So we know from this and other verses in the Bible, other stories, that God will. Why is this happening? It's maybe a multiple reasons, but it's because God is testing you. Whoa, God would never do that. Okay, your modern mega church Christian God won't do anything to upset your world. But the God of the Bible will rock your world. He'll let you be thrown into a pit and sold into slavery to let you rise up through the prison system to become the visor of the king of Egypt. Or he'll let you wander following these promises that never get fulfilled, just one step away. And finally, when you're 100 years old, you'll finally get the son. Now you're 159. He's going to ask you to sacrifice the son. It's like, what is going on here? He's 115 years old or so. And God says to Abraham, you know what? I'm going to test you to see if you're going to be obedient. What the heck? I left Ur when I was 70. I've been wandering around this land for 40 years, and now you're going to test me. Yep. Now, if you're going to get angry about it, now God will flip it on you. He said, now you're testing me. And this isn't good. And you can see what happened to the people in the wilderness. It's just like, so it's like that again, that speaks to me because I've been following God. I've proven I'm faithful. It's like, so no more testing, right, God? Well, not necessarily. What the heck? I want to see if you're faithful. And it's like, would he do that? Yeah, I think so. I mean, look at the poor Abraham, the hero of faith, 115 years old. I'm not even half that yet. That's unusual to be able to say that. I'm not even half that old yet, so, well, heck, I'm not even 70. Meaning God called Abram out of Ur at the age of 70. I'm still 8 years away from getting called to leave Ur of the Chaldeans and begin the journey. Okay. I'm just ranting and raving right there, but it's just kind of interesting. Okay. He says, now I know that, do not lay a hand, he says, do not do anything to him. Now I know that you fear God because you have not withheld from me your son, your only son. Which is interesting because I've often wondered about this because has not Abraham proven his faithfulness? Well, he's proven to hear the covenant and agree to the covenant. And God says, I'm going to do this and do this. But this is one of those times where he's asking Abraham to throw not just his past away, you see. It's one thing, leave Ur. All right, God's got a big plan for me. And now the big plan is with your son Isaac, and you got this great future. Your descendants are going to be numerous. All nations are going to be blessed. Oh, wow, this looks great. Yeah, now I'm going to ask you to just cut that off right there and give up your future too. What? Now, it's one thing to leave Ur for this great future. Now I'm asking you to just give up the future, and you have nothing except just God. It almost sounds like the book of Job, where Job loses everything, and all he's got is, I don't even have a future. All you got is me. Is that enough? It's like, well, I was kind of hoping for, like, I don't know, a future. You just got me. It's like, all right, good enough. Well, then now, that gives you that's a whole nother level of faith. If you are going through like drug rehabilitation, you want to leave the life of drugs away, but you got this life of future right here that you can have this great future if you just give up drugs and give up this wicked way of life or whatever. And as I hear, it's like, yeah, okay, how about this? We're going to give this up and we're going to give your future up. Now, do you just want the rehab program? What? Why would I want a rehab program? Just, it's like, you're not going anywhere. All you got is this. Well, this is nothing. This is a means to an end. Oh, no. The Lord is not a means to an end. The Lord is the Lord. I'm going to give up my past, going to give up the future, and just have the Lord. Wow, I thought we had like eternity in heaven. You know, I thought it was like we're going to walk away from this life of sin. We're going to make this deal, accept Christ, and I get to go to heaven, have my sins forgiven. It's like, oh, yeah, the thing about heaven, I'm going to ask you to sacrifice that. You're just going to live, just right now, all you've got is the Lord. It's like, it's kind of empty. Oh, it is? It's kind of empty. That's like, then you really don't understand the Lord. And Abraham was right there where he got this right. All he's got in this story is obedience to the Lord. No past, can't go back to Ur. Being asked to cut off Isaac for the future, and all he's got is the Lord. He says, okay, I'll take what's behind door number two. And God says, wow, you really trust me. You gave up the future just for me. Well, yeah, and that's what Job did. He says, I'll shut my mouth. He says, I'll just trust you. I don't know what to do. God says, well, very good. And he had him go explain to his friends with that transition. That's what this is saying. Do not do anything to him. Now I know that you fear God because you have not withheld from me your son, your only son. Abraham looked up, and there in the thicket he saw a ram caught by its horns. Now, some people want to make a big deal about this, and it's worth at least considering. Abraham, it says, Isaac asks, where is the lamb? God himself will provide the lamb. Provide is the word Jireh or Yireh, which we get Yahweh Jireh, Jehovah Jireh. The Lord will provide the lamb. Well, now when it comes time, Abraham looks up and saw a ram caught by its horns. There up on Mount Moriah in the thicket, there was a ram caught, and they just went over and grabbed the ram. Again, now ram is another level of sacrifice. It's something that was used by the priest for priestly offerings. He went over and took the ram and sacrificed it as a burnt offering instead of his son. Now, the ideal is he says God will provide the lamb, but God on this day did not provide the lamb. He provided a ram. So that prophecy or that promise was yet left hanging, unfilled. God will provide the lamb until the Lamb of God comes and was indeed. Again, I don't know if you want to make a big jump with that, but it's hanging right there because it talks about a lamb. Now they've got a ram. He went over and took the ram and sacrificed it as a burnt offering instead of his son. So Abraham called, here it is for the fourth time, that place. The Lord, Yahweh is the word there, will provide, or Yahweh Jireh, or we would say in the English, Jehovah Jireh. Yahweh will provide. And to this day it is said, on the mountain of Yahweh it will be provided. On this mountain, this is the mountain of Yahweh. That's identified. This is the mountain of Yahweh where he provided the ram for Isaac. And that's where he will. So whenever the future, that's where the Lord will provide. And that's where Christ appeared. And Christ was crucified right here. This is where the temple was, just right there outside the walls of that time. That's where Christ was crucified. So it's like we're talking, it would be, if you look there, on this map right here, you've got the mountains, Mount Zion over here, or the Western Ridge, you've got Mount of Olives. This is Mount Moriah, and the Temple Mount is right here, just right over here, just to the outside, kind of as the hills rising right there. That's where the Calvary was. So it was, on the mountain of God. Christ was not crucified on the Temple Mount in front of the temple, but he was crucified. There's the Western Ridge over there. He was right there, which is that close. It would be in, if he's saying in West Des Moines, that would be in West Des Moines. That would be on Mount Moriah. Anyway, if you want to read that there. The angel of the Lord called Abram from heaven a second time, verse 15, and says, I swear by myself. And this is again another time where God swears by himself because there's nothing greater for him to swear by. In other words, he's making a promise on the most solid thing in existence, which is myself. I swear by myself, declares the Lord, that because you have done this and have not withheld your son, your only son, I will surely bless you and make your descendants as numerous as the stars of the sky, or stars in the sky, and as the sand on the seashore. Now that seems to be a little redundant because he's already made that promise, but that time it was always based on a covenant that he says based on himself. I will do this. The Abrahamic covenant is an unconditional covenant. I am going to do. God is going to make Israel great. He is going to do that. That's the unconditional Abrahamic covenant. Independent of them being blessed, all nations being blessed through Abraham, that would be more, I would assume, because you have obeyed me. Then Abraham returned to his servants, and they set off together for Beersheba, and Abraham stayed in Beersheba. if you go to chapter 23, just while we're here, chapter 23, verse 1, Sarah lived to be 127 years old. She died at Kiriath Arba, that is Hebron, in the land of Canaan, and Abram went to mourn for Sarah and to weep over her. Now, that's that verse that could be loaded. It wasn't like they're on family vacation. If they're on family vacation and she dies on vacation, she still died in Beersheba. You know, I mean, you still, that's where she was. Especially since she's old, she's not traveling. So she's apparently living in Hebron, and especially, and Abraham went to mourn. Where'd he go? He went from Beersheba up to Hebron where his wife was. Then Abraham rose from beside the dead wife, his dead wife, and spoke to the Hittites. He said, and then there he buys the cave of Machpelah, which still existed. I've never been able to see it because it's in territory that it's too dangerous to get to. But it is probably most likely the tomb of Sarah and then Abraham and then Isaac and his wife. There's an ancient cave down inside. There's from this time period. It's got a big wall around it. Same kind of stones that the Herod built in this wall. So there's a building built by the Herod's time, the Herodian time, to honor that site. So anyway, that just kind of indicates that for some reason they ended up being in two different places, and that's where she was buried. Anyway, we'll pick that up next time some more. I do want to point this out in Jeremiah 19:6, just to finish this, 19:6. This is one of the explanations. This is kind of out of sync right now. But there is this verse, because this bothers me, because, you know, you tell the story, it's a great story. But throughout the Bible, God forbids child sacrifice. And now you've got God asking for a child sacrifice or a human sacrifice. And it's like, that just in my mind is still okay, fine, he's God. But there's still some, I still feel like something's missing, in that account. Why would God ask for something so atrocious as that? Well, for Abraham, it was a test. And Abraham, here's the thing. And I'm kind of talking to myself right now, so you probably want to leave, you could. God's against human sacrifice, but yet how did our sins get paid for? I mean, it was a human sacrifice. I mean, Jesus died on the cross. And again, it wasn't, child sacrifice, but it was like there was that he atoned for us on the cross. So there is that side of it. But the child sacrificing, that was done to these pagan gods, which are actually spiritual beings. And in Jeremiah 19, verse 6, the nation of Israel's, or Judah, is going to go into captivity because had been offering child sacrifices during Manasseh's time. In fact, it may be Hezekiah's brothers, it says they passed through the fire. And you notice they didn't become king, because when he passed through the fire, that means they were put in the fire and were consumed. So Manasseh was offering his children, at least there's grounds to make that point, offering his children in the fire in the Hinnom Valley in what is called the burner. It'd be the god image to Molech or something. And they put there, and the child would just roll down into the fire and be consumed. And they're partying and all kinds of music going on so they can't hear the children screaming. In verse 4 of Jeremiah 19. For they have forsaken me, the Lord, and made this place of foreign gods, and they have burned sacrifices in the gods that neither they nor their fathers nor the kings of Judah ever knew. And they have filled this place with the blood of innocent. They have built the high places of Baal to burn their sons in the fire as offerings to Baal, something I did not command or mention, nor did it enter my mind. So beware, the days are coming, declares Yahweh, when people will no longer call this place Topheth. That means the burner. That means this is the place of the burner, the oven that they would sacrifice these children. Or the valley of Ben-Hinnom, or the valley of Hinnom, but the valley of slaughter. And that valley, you can see on this picture right here, the valley of Hinnom Valley comes down and around right through here, and it meets the Kidron Valley. So in a sense, right through here is the Hinnom Valley. Well, no, you can't see it here. I'm trying to think. I don't have a picture here. But nonetheless, it includes some nice lush grass, but then gets down into some rocky places. That was a place when the Babylonians came. They slaughtered the people and just threw the bodies in it. It became the garbage dump. It is referred to Gehenna, the place of continuous burning, because in Jesus' day it became a place of the garbage dump or continuous fire. Now, the Jews had the same problem that we would have. You've got God saying, I didn't plan this. I didn't demand this. I didn't even think of this. And then you go, yeah, but here's one of our champion stories is God's asking for a human sacrifice. It's like, so you, this one of the things where you just can't say, no, I'm just not going to look at it. It's like you've got a huge contrast. God is judging the nation for offering human sacrifices and says, I did not command it. I did not decree it. It never even came into my mind. And right here it says it. So the Jews, what the Jews would do to answer this, where it says did not command it, they're saying he's talking about three times. The command, the decree, or the thought. And this is talking about the king of Moab, king of Mesha. And again, without going back through all the stories, Israel was attacking them and they were defeating the Moabites. And so the king puts his son up on the wall of the city and offers a sacrifice, a human sacrifice. I'm stabbing him again, kid his throat. And the Moabites turned around and they won the war. God is saying, I did not command that. In Japheth, in the book of Judges, Japheth, one of the judges, goes off to war and to deliver Israel and says, you know, whatever comes out of my house, the first thing that meets me when I come home, I'm going to offer it as a sacrifice. Well, he comes home and his daughter's so excited to see him home. She comes out singing, excited to see him. And he goes, oh, I wish it hadn't happened. And he offered her as a sacrifice. Now, people try and dance around that story, but if you read the story, what it is, he then offered his daughter as a sacrifice to the God who delivered him, which was, and God saying, I did not decree Jephthah's daughter to be sacrificed. And it never, the thought never entered my mind would be Isaac,